And our connection this hour is being made at food banks and food pantries across the country, where hundreds, sometimes thousands of people are lining up seeking help. Nearly 21 million Americans lost jobs in April. That's a record number, pushing the official unemployment rate to around 15%. But there are other metrics that put it right around 20%. And over the last several weeks, you may have heard Governor Cuomo discussing how struggling farmers across the state, well, he told the story about how some were dumping milk because they can't sell their products. Meanwhile, hundreds of people, now thousands, could be going hungry across the state. Last week, the state awarded $25 million to food banks to buy agricultural products grown in New York. The federal government is also addressing emergency food aid. The Coronavirus Food Assistance Program awarded $3 billion to food banks and other organizations serving Americans in need. Now, let's be clear here. These food banks are lifelines for communities and people in desperate times. There is no question about that. And many, many people are thankful for the work they're doing. You might have also, though, seen the authors of an op-ed for the New York Times say, maybe this is not the way to go. They state, quote, it is a solution driven by ideology rather than practicality, end quote. They say food banks and food pantries don't have the infrastructure to handle the volume that is required now. Instead, they point to the Supplemental Nutritious Assistance Program, SNAP, you might have known it as food stamps, as best suited to handle emergency food aid. So this hour, a conversation about food systems and what works best, especially when we see the scale of the problem when it comes to food assistance during a pandemic. Let's welcome our guests. Mitch Grupper is the Chief Strategy Officer for FoodLink and a member of Rochester City Council. Mitch, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Also, hello to Carmen Allen, president of Beyond the Sanctuary Food Pantry. Carmen, welcome. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for the work that you do. Belinda Knight is the director of community operations for ACCORD, the Community Action Program in Allegheny County. Belinda, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Very well. Thanks for the invitation to join you.
Let me ask Mitch to kind of give us a little bit of an overview as to how you see the landscape of the problem, and then I'm going to ask Carmen and Belinda to tell us what kind of need they've seen here. I mean, Mitch, if there's a criticism that the New York Times was airing, it's not that food pantries don't do great work, it's that the scale of this problem has been so fast and so steep that SNAP seems like the only thing that could get its arms all the way around it. I wonder how you see it, Mitch.
Yeah, I would fully agree with the principles laid out in the New York Times article, and I'll make sure that FoodLink tweets it out too, so that and puts it on Facebook so people can read it. It's a very well done article, and ultimately it echoes points that we've been making from the start here at FoodLink, which is that the emergency food system is not built to handle a many months long crisis that is not emergency but becomes chronic. And on top of that, it is not meant to be able to handle a system that sees hundreds, if not thousands, of new people needing emergency food on a regular basis. So the work that we've done at FoodLink for this is very much we leaned into partners like Carmen and Belinda. We got them as much food as we possibly could, as soon as we possibly could. And I'm proud to say FoodLink has been on the, you know, we were very prepared for COVID as much as anyone could be. But as the crisis worsened, we actually leaned out of our network and began to develop drive-through distributions throughout all of our service area using county governments. Again, because these pantries cannot handle the huge amounts of food that is needed by the community right now. SNAP could, though. That I think, is a very salient point that needs to be reinforced over and over again.
So, Carmen, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you typically do at Beyond the Sanctuary, where you're located, and what it has been like in these last 8 to 10 weeks for you?
Certainly. First of all, again, thank you. We are located in the southwest quadrant at the Memorial Amy Zion Church on Clarissa Street. And we have been operating for the last several years. We typically, in addition to food pantry, we provide free clothing, we have social workers available, and we're working on job readiness. We've suspended all the other activities, and we're exclusively focusing on the food pantry right now. Last year, we provided or fulfilled about 2,200 requests for food throughout all of 2019. Already this year, we're up to 1,300. And so you can see the magnitude of the change and the need immediately in the neighborhood. We are have input a number of safety measures so that our volunteers are safe as well as our clients. And so we have a good base of it. But as Mitch indicated, if we continue this kind of trajectory, we really won't be able to sustain that. We won't be able to meet the need in the climate that we have today. I would say that if the SNAP program is expanded so that it meets more of the need of the people that are out there today, there would need to be some kinds of tweaks in the things that are requirements for it so that we still don't have a large population that falls through the cracks.
Well, tell me a little bit more about how to do that then, Carmen. What kind of tweaks?
Well, for example, the eligibility is based on, I think, about a $900 net per individual if that's their income. And so it is a disincentive for people that need that to even find sustainable work. So that's just one example of the tweaks that need to be made so that it can be better utilized for those that are in those situations.
Is there, Carmen, is there an income threshold change that you'd set it? Would you remove? I mean, how do you create that line so that you are effectively saying we're going to offer the help for people who need it the most, while also not creating a disincentive to find work?
Yeah, that's a good question. No matter where you draw the line, someone is going to be at that threshold.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it needs to be a little higher than where it is today. So that needs a little bit more thought than I have been able to give at this point in time. But I do know there's a lot of people that are missing out that can't afford to feed their family, to work, pay for daycare and child care and all those other essentials at this point in time. And that's just going to continue to exasperate.
Well, Carmen, you're part of that group that's, to steal that metaphor that other people have used many times, you are building the plane as you put it on the runway, you know, trying to fly it. And so, you know, it's not going to be perfect. And before I turn to Belinda Knight for the same kind of questions, let me just ask Mitch Gruber to kind of weigh in on that. You know, we cannot let the perfect be the enemy of the good in a crisis. We understand that. If we find a flaw in a program, it doesn't invalidate a program. If we find a flaw in a model that is projecting a possible set of outcomes for infections and if something falls outside the model, it doesn't invalidate the idea that we should be building models and trying to understand future possible outcomes here. So knowing all of that, Mitch, how much do you look at those income thresholds and those, you know, incentives versus disincentives that Carmen's talking about and say, okay, here's what we've learned so far. Here's probably what should change, or here's what where we're comfortable with the line being.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that Carmen is correct, except that I would say that we don't know at all what the kind of post-COVID world is going to look like, right? We certainly don't know what the post-COVID economy is going to look like. We know that right now the unemployment rate has skyrocketed. So I do think there could be simple tweaks to just ensure that at the very least folks who are unemployed, folks who either are receiving unemployment or who are one of the thousands and thousands in line in queue waiting for unemployment automatically are enrolled in SNAP. Those are real simple solutions that could be addressed right now. And I guess I would point to the fact that SNAP is not going to look if the premise that we need to expand SNAP occurs, and I guess let me say this for the listeners out there, Evan, this hasn't been stated yet. In each of the COVID stimulus packages, a SNAP proposal was put on the table, pushed very hard by congressional Democrats, and each and every time it was stalled and then killed in the Senate by Republicans. It has fallen, I believe, very clearly without any discrepancy at all along party lines. But if in fact there was an expansion of SNAP benefits, it would look different than if there was an expansion of SNAP benefits 2 years ago. It would have to Carmen's point, it has to be more inclusive. It would have to have different eligibility standards. And I'm very confident all those things would happen. The first thing we have to do, though, is get the federal government to recognize that SNAP is an absolutely vital and critical program to fund right now and to fund well.
But, Mitch, let me just follow that point as you talk about what Democrats vis-a-vis Republicans have wanted to do with SNAP. I know you're a Democrat. I know that you've got strong feelings about what the leadership has done nationally on both parties. Do your best to explain why you think Republicans wanted to go the direction they did with SNAP. I mean, they would not probably agree that it was just out of cruelty or callousness. What's the argument they're making?
You know, I under normal circumstances, I think I'd be able to give you an answer, whether tongue-in-cheek or not. I have no idea right now, because the real beauty of SNAP is that it is historically a bipartisan program. It is popular both in rural, urban, in rural, urban, and suburban communities. And on top of the fact that it actually does very good for people's own family nutrition, it's also an economic boost. So the idea that Republicans have been voting against it is something I truly, truly do not understand. I really don't. And I would just point out that I believe recently, I think it was Channel 8 here, did a town hall and included Tom Reed, who is, you know, Tom Reed covers part of Food Link service area. And I'm not trying to be partisan whatsoever, Evan. I am personally a Democrat, but that is not the reason I bring up his name at all. He recognized in the town hall how important SNAP is, but he has voted against it each and every time during the stimulus packages. So I don't know the answer. I'd love to hear a Republican explain it.
Is it a money thing?
I suppose that would be an argument, but I don't really think that anyone's been thinking too much about the dollars and cents among huge, many billion-dollar stimulus packages. And as the editorial that brought us to this conversation states, the Feds, the USDA, just put forward a $3 billion plan for the USDA to buy up surplus commodities and to give it. And essentially to give it to food banks to distribute. And that is all well and good. We're happy to participate in that program. Certainly we'll continue to put out some really excellent high-quality food throughout the 10-county service area that we have here at FoodLink. But it doesn't negate the fact that those $3 billion going towards SNAP might be better spent.
So we will reach out to Congressman Tom Reed's office. He has been on this program just recently. He has always been accessible. And we will ask, because as Mitch points out, he has spoken favorably about SNAP. So we will ask why he and his party have tended to vote against what Mitch is talking about there. And we'll try to get some clarity, and we'll share it with our listeners when we can do that. Belinda Knight, Director of Community Operations for ACCORD, the Community Action Program in Allegheny County. Why don't you describe what the typical workload is, and why don't you describe then what's changed in the last couple of months?
Okay, thank you. So our typical utilization of our pantry, we're an emergency pantry located in rural Allegheny County. We typically have about 120 to 140 families visit us on any given month. A trend that we noticed at the end of 2019 was a gradual increase in the usage of our pantry. And families can visit our pantry every 30 days. We noticed probably in the fall that our numbers were increasing a little bit by around 15%. And then by Christmas time, it looked like more 25%. And by January, we typically see a lull in the utilization of our pantry because families change at that time. Their income status changes about that time between January and February. And we didn't notice that this year. So we were already at about a 25% increase of families that over the past year that we had seen, if you compared year to year from 19 to 20. And then when the pandemic arrived in March and the pause order was initiated, we looked more at about a week-long period that we were at about 50% greater utilization. And then it kind of crept back down a little bit after that. So right now we're functioning about 10 boxes a day. We see about 10 families a day. And what they're telling us is that they're underemployed, lacking adequate employment. They've recently lost their job to the pandemic. And we're also helping families who can't connect with the food pantry. They may be families who have never connected with an emergency pantry before because they've never needed to. They may be unfamiliar with the services. So our challenge right now is to add a component of outreach to our daily work so that we're reaching out to other agencies and school districts. And we've partnered with the Department of Health, several school districts in Allegheny County, to package shelf-stable items so that they can actually keep boxes in their cafeterias. So if they have a family that they know may be struggling with food security, they can simply put a box on the bus with that meal that they're sending to their children already. So it's been a really great way for us to reach families who don't normally utilize the pantry, but there's a lot more work to be done for sure.
Are you concerned, Belinda, not just where you are in Allegheny County, but food pantries in general? Could food pantries be overwhelmed by need in a crisis like this, or do you have a different view of it?
I am a facilitator of our Allegheny County Food Coalition as well, and in conversation with my partners over the last 8 weeks now, if not more, we have talked about that, and there was an initial need for additional food, absolutely, and Food Link rose to that challenge quickly and fiercely, as did our community. We've had more community donations come in than we ever have before, which is humbling and amazing. And what the pantries are telling us is one of the challenges they have is the storeroom, storage space. So we might get a delivery or a donation of several hundred pounds of meat, but we need to move very quickly to make sure that we can get that into the right freezer space or refrigerated space and share those resources. So coordination has been a really necessary thing. And it seems that pantry partners right now are feeling somewhat secure in the donations and the support that we've been all receiving from the community. I think we're all looking toward what's going to happen in the next 4 to 6 weeks. What does post-pandemic rural New York look like, or rural Allegheny County look like? And we're just trying to seal up those gaps in our own communication and our networking with the community to make sure that everyone's on the same page and knowing how pantries are operating from day to day, so that we can, if we have a need, we can put that right out to the community and the community can respond.
Sure. I certainly hope the next 4 to 6 weeks we see a continuing downward bend of the curve. And there's a lot we don't know, listeners, but let's not have a second surge of infections if we can avoid it. Let's not be so confident that we're behind this thing, be beyond this thing, that that we once again overwhelm our medical systems, our food systems. Because we've got an opportunity now to kind of catch our breath as a region and as a nation, and boy, they're doing hard work here. Mitch Gruber, let me ask you. Go ahead, Mitch, and then I'm going to get to some emails. Go ahead.
Yeah, Evan, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on one thing Belinda said, and maybe just give a little bit of context for the listeners. So Belinda said something that was actually right in the article that we opened with, which is about the limited storerooms and the limited kind of food distribution infrastructure that a lot of food pantries have. And that's certainly true of Belinda and Carmen's sites, both of which I've been to before, and they both do amazing work. I mean, I'm incredibly impressed and eternally grateful to the two of them. But they would agree too that if someone came to them with a truckload of food and said, "Hey, I have everything you guys want. Here's a truckload of it. Can you take it?" They'd both have to reject it because they don't have that kind of space. That's what the editorial said as well. And I would just say, you know, to zoom out, that's precisely why what we did at Food Link, when the pandemic really hit and it became clear we were going to have to do to serve this community, we started to do something that we've never done before, which is have big mass drive-through distributions. We're doing 2 per county, and we're doing 6 in Monroe County every 2 weeks in 2 week cycles. And in the rural counties, we're working with partners like Belinda and the County Department of Health and Office of the Aging and Department of Social Services. And in Monroe County, we're working with partners like Carmen, and same thing with both the county and city government. And what this has allowed us to do is serve, you know, upwards of 300-400 families at once, get them a huge assortment of different products, and make it safe, doing it in a socially distant way, and ensuring that the most vulnerable people in the community are getting there, because the county government is helping to make sure that happens. That's been really wonderful, but there is a problem with it too, right? When we're doing these drive-through distributions, we can't offer frozen foods. We can't offer that many fresh products. We have to really focus in on non-perishables.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the nature of emergency and charitable food. SNAP does the opposite. SNAP empowers people to be able to have some dollars to go buy what it is that they and their family need. SNAP empowers people to be able to go maximize every single penny that they have for the most food possible. And so no matter how hard, and I'm so proud of the work that we're doing at FoodLink, everyone's probably seen the awful pictures from places like San Antonio where there were literally 10,000 cars
Yep.
waiting in line to get food. We have not had that problem in Rochester, and not because we haven't had the need, by the way. Our poverty rates are higher than San Antonio. We have more confirmed cases of COVID than San Antonio. We don't have those scenes because we're a much better organized community based on the work that FoodLink, Beyond the Sanctuary, and Accord do. However, the bottom line is we are not a network that is built to sustain this for long term. We need to make sure people have dollars to go buy food, and that's what SNAP increases would do.
All right, so that's the prescription as you see it then. Just SNAP increases. What about, because people are asking, well, who is eligible for SNAP? Anyone on unemployment? Should they be? What do you see as current eligibility versus how you would set it and the specific changes you would make today if you could, Mitch?
Yeah, I think we need to figure out how to effectively tie unemployment with SNAP increases. Absolutely. Right now we have too many people who have been hit really hard by this and have never had to work with emergency food before, and have never had to work through the Department of Social Services. So we need to figure out how to make this easy and streamlined to get cash to the folks who are being hit hardest. I'd also say that one thing that happened immediately, and this can be a little bit confusing because there's lots of different types of SNAP, but immediately one thing that Monroe County did issued along with the rest of the state is everybody who received SNAP started to get the maximum amount. That was part of the initial COVID stimulus package, was an opportunity to increase. So some people in this community, sadly, it's mostly seniors and people who live alone, receive the bare minimum, which I think is like maybe $20 or $30 a month. It's not much. And the maximum that people can receive is closer to $200 a month. Everybody who was receiving SNAP started to get the maximum amount. That was great. That's how it ought to have been. There's also something right now called pandemic SNAP, which New York State has not been approved for yet, but we should be, and hopefully we will be shortly, whereby everybody who had kids who are eligible for free and reduced lunch at schools becomes SNAP eligible. Because think about it. Those families are losing or now have to feed those kids many, many meals a week that they didn't previously have to. So we need to figure out how to tie eligibility of SNAP with these other programs, unemployment, school closures. Those things need to be tied to the new eligibility criteria.
All right, a couple of things. Let me just read a couple of emails. Andrew was asking, it's still not clear to him, if anybody walks into a food pantry, who's able to walk out with actual food? So Mitch was just talking about SNAP eligibility. Carmen, if someone comes to Beyond the Sanctuary, who can you help? Where does the line currently exist? Andrew is asking again for you to kind of describe that line.
So we at Beyond the Sanctuary serve everyone. If you come to our door and say that you need food, we will provide food for you. We have no requirements that you have to receive SNAP or income level or anything of that nature. We work off of a platform of trust. So if you come to us and say that you need food, we are going to provide it for you.
Okay. Belinda?
It's the same for us. We don't deny anyone the ability to access the food pantry. And I think one of the benefits that Carmen also mentioned, too, is they have social workers on staff, and that's the structure that we have in our food pantry as well. We can work with families to help access other supports for the family and make sure that they get the referrals they need for services that will possibly help increase the income that, that comes into the household and help increase their food dollars as well.
Okay.
Evan, yep. One thing that Andrew and all listeners should know is if you don't know where to access food, please call 211. 211 is the lifeline. It exists throughout our region, and 211 will walk you through where you live, where the closest place to access food is. If you're someone who can't make it out of your house and you need food delivered, they'll walk you through that as well. That's a critical piece to all this. And for all of the drive-through distributions I mentioned before, we have six of them every 2 weeks. The first one, by the way, of this next cycle is tomorrow at Greece Arcadia High School. It requires pre-registration through 211. So everyone in the community should write those three numbers down. And if you or someone you know needs food, that is the first place you ought to call.
Yeah, let me just echo, this is Carmen, let me just echo that we are getting a number of clients through 211, and we have implemented a home delivery service as well, because we have a number of clients that are seniors, that are disabled, and in that at-risk group during the pandemic, so we did not want them to go hungry throughout all of this.
Okay. Andrew, I hope that helps. Let me get Dan's email. Dan says, Evan, what about the idea that restaurants are most qualified, capable, connected to food distribution, and in need of funding to provide need for food distribution? This is a popular concept. That's what Dan says. Mitch, what do you say?
I fully agree with Dan. This is something that I think we all should have implemented on a national level. Let me return to Dan's question in a second, but let me just make a quick aside, Evan.
Sure.
Sorry, I interrupted my own thought process.
That's okay.
One of the things that's really been lacking over the last 2 months is really sound, smart, national policy related to food. And someone who I think the world of is Chef Jose Andres. I'm sure many people who listen to your show are familiar with Chef Andres. He wrote an op-ed in the New York Times probably late March, very early in the pandemic, where he stated what the federal government should do is redeploy furloughed and laid off restaurant workers and basically create Meals on Wheels on steroids that can go everywhere. And it was a brilliant piece of writing. I have been actively trying to make sure that we're able to do something similar here, which I'll get to in a second. It never made any real headway with the federal government. Governor Newsom in California actually began to implement this project about probably 3 weeks or a month ago, where specific restaurants were paid to deliver home-cooked meals directly to vulnerable seniors. Brilliant program. We need to do something similar locally. I will say the city of Rochester, putting my other hat on now, the city of Rochester is looking to pilot something similar on a very small level. I would say this really needs to happen at federal and state levels, not municipal, because again, just because someone is in Gates and is hungry doesn't mean that they shouldn't be able to get this same service offered to them. So we're working on it at the city level. I would say that from FoodLink's perspective, one thing that we've done as part of our effort to support the Rochester City School District is occasionally when the demand gets so high on a daily basis, we can actually subcontract out to some of the caterers in town to be able to help us with the production of meals to go to school-age kids. If we had really good national policy, this would have been something that we would have done as a nation 2 months ago. But instead, we're still talking about it here in May.
So, Mitch, as we as we look forward in what is probably going to be another year of a pandemic, I mean, I think right now with the governor talking about phase one of reopening starting on Friday in this region, people look at Ohio, where my mother, I'm trying to talk her out of having a nail and a hair appointment this weekend. I mean, a lot of things are changing. which, by the way, listeners, I'm not saying I don't want anybody to ever get their hair cut again. My mom is 75, and she's had pneumonia 3 times since October. I'd rather she not go out. But the point being, I think we are seeing a lot of optimism that we're not only reopening, but, well, maybe we're hitting toward the tail end of it. And, Mitch, my feeling is that we have to be patient, that it is a good thing that the warmer weather is coming, that we're going to do more outdoor activity. Maybe we'll see more businesses open slowly, more outdoors first, and that we'll figure this out. But we could see recurrences of cases. We could see a resurge in infections either in the summer or in the fall or even next winter. Nobody wants to think about that right now. How much are you thinking long-term about food systems, Mitch, as opposed to feeling like, hey, you know, we're a week or a month or two away from feeling like we're on the back end of this?
No, I feel just the opposite of that. I mean, right now there's a couple of things that I think are sort of red herrings about how big the issue is. I mean, obviously a lot of people received the pandemic unemployment, the additional $600. Eventually that goes away. We know that a lot of folks have been able to have a lifeline through the SBA and the PPP loans and things like that, and eventually those are going to go away. And the reality is, I think you probably know more about this than I do, Evan, but we are on the precipice. We are in a recession, but we are on the precipice of something perhaps even bigger than that. And when that happens, the food need is going to continue to grow. And so we need to develop smart, thoughtful policy on a long-term basis. It's something that, you know, I'm very proud that FoodLink is at the table here with a lot of other key community partners and government partners and business partners talking about these things regularly. But sadly, I'm not trying to pass the buck, but the honest truth is that I don't think we can do these things on very localized levels without having some overarching policy coming from Washington, D.C. And that's where something like SNAP comes in. We can do the best we can at a local level to be able to plan. I'm incredibly proud of the fact that I wear, you know, two hats that have allowed for conversations about feeding to really get into the government space. That's been something that I think has been very good and meaningful and productive. But the fact is that if we don't have something that is overarching food policy, not running around with our like chickens with our heads cut off, throwing $3 billion to create a solution to a problem 2 months after the fact, which is what the USDA did, we're not going to get out of this. So we need to have smart policy. We need to listen to people like Chef Andres. That stuff is absolutely critical if we are going to see this in our rearview mirror in 2 years.
All right. And meanwhile, listeners, if you've got food needs right now, Mitch, you said start by calling 211.
Please call 211, especially if you're – I mean, it's a little bit different if you're in rural communities. Belinda, is 211 the lifeline in Allegheny County as well?
Yes, 211 helpline is what
okay,
it's called.
Okay, so 211, it should be a call for anyone. You can also text 211-898-211. And please find out where the closest place to register for a food distribution or to be referred to wonderful partners like Carmen or Belinda.
All right. And real briefly, in our last 2 minutes, we've had listeners asking. I'll ask Mitch, Carmen, Belinda. Mitch, I'll start with you. We got to keep it tight. Listeners want to know if they want to donate food somewhere, where do they go with it? Mitch?
I strongly encourage people who want to donate food to do so to their local food pantry, their neighborhood-based food pantry. That really is the place. So find out who that is. If it's if you're in Brighton, go to the Brighton Food Cupboard, so on, Irondequoit, so on and so forth. If you're looking to make a monetary cash donation, again, call them. Please visit FoodLink's website, foodlinkny.org. You can see how to contribute to us or how to find other partners as well.
All right. Carmen, if people want to donate food, what would you tell them?
We would love to have your donations at Beyond the Sanctuary. We are located at the Memorial Amy Zion Church, 549 Clarissa Street. Or you feel free to give me an email. Send me an email at beyondthesanctuary20@gmail.com.
beyondthesanctuary20@gmail.com. And that's just one of the pantries here. Belinda, down in Allegheny County, what would you say about food donations?
I would also direct those toward all of our local pantries, and they can be reached by calling 211 or accessing Accord's website at www.accordcorp.org. And any of the local pantries are ready and able to accept donations and communicate with each other so that, you know, if there's a plentiful donation coming our way, then we share those resources quite often any local pantry is definitely going to reach people in need.
Belinda, good luck to you. Thanks for taking the time for the program today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Carmen Allen, president of Beyond the Sanctuary Food Pantry. Thank you for taking the time for us, Carmen.
Thank you, and thank you for making this a topic that we can all talk about.
Well, you got it. I mean, it's a big community need, and it's frankly a big national need. Mitch Gruber, Chief Strategy Officer for Food Link and member of Rochester City Council. Well, let's continue this. Let's monitor what's going on, and let's keep these discussions going. As always, thank you, Mitch.
Thanks for your time.
You got it. And listeners, as we close the hour, I want to remind you, because people have been asking, that you heard the governor today moving into phase one. We've got the green light for the Rochester Finger Lakes region, one of three New York regions that has met all seven criteria. That means starting Friday, we're into phase one. That doesn't mean your favorite restaurant is going to be open for sit-down service. It means construction and manufacturing that was non-essential can be green-lit. Retail with curbside pickup only. Drive-in movies. Get ready for a drive-in summer. Garden centers that weren't previously open. And that's pretty much the list for now. If we have a good couple of weeks, by the end of May, early June, we could maybe move into phase two. But for now, that's what we're looking at. So a lot of people thinking about that. Keep that in mind. It's not everything, but we're going to take those first steps starting this weekend. More connections coming up.